The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Welcome to Red Leg Nation Radio, your home for discussion and analysis of Cincinnati Reds baseball all year long. Now here's your host, Chad Dotson.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Red Leg Nation Radio. This is episode number 202 of the world's finest Cincinnati Reds podcast. Joining me again today, I'm Chad Dotson, by the way, and joining me is Jason Linden. Jason, we're a week into the season. You doing all right?
I am doing just fine, Chad. Just fine.
Well, that's good. Just fine is better than a lot of people are doing these days. Can I talk just really quickly, though? I want to actually, before we get into the meat of the podcast, really fast, I want to talk about how much I love you guys out there in Red Leg Nation. You know, yesterday we thought, hey, let's throw up just a dumb little promotion for the book, The Big 50, The Men and Moments That Made the Cincinnati Reds, my book that's out, that I wrote with Chris Garber that's out now. And we thought, hey, you know, all right, anybody that buys it between last night and the end of Friday night's game, we'll throw some baseball cards in an envelope and a thank you note and send them your way. And if you bought it within that time. And I said, if we sell 25 before Friday, end of Friday night's game, I'll even throw in an Eugenio Suarez bobblehead. And we busted right through that. We were already over 50 now. I'm going to give away an Eric Davis bobblehead too. I don't know where I'm going to get all these Reds cards. I guess I'm going to go on eBay. But I'm blown away by the love that's been sent our way by Red Leg Nation, all you guys out there. And it's really just a fantastic community. And what I said last night was, you say what you want about Reds fans, and there are some fans that are, you know, always upset, and some fans that are always sunny-eyed, and some fans in between. And what you don't see, though, is that all the Reds fans are passionate. I mean, this is a really passionate fan base. And we disagree. We argue. You know, nobody has the market cornered on being right about everything. But that, to me, that's the word passion. And I really, we saw it in the last day or two with this little dumb promotion we did. And I wanted to thank everybody out there for listening to the podcast and for coming to the website and for buying the book. And it's just, I'm overwhelmed with gratitude today, Jason.
Well, you know, that I saw the Ural's little promotion go off. I have the Red Leg Nation Twitter handle on my phone that I tweet from sometimes. And all of a sudden my phone was just blowing up with notifications and it's like, oh, yeah. But it seemed like everybody, all that went well. And the only quibble I would say is that you made the claim that no one has the market cornered on being right, and you forgot it. You forgot who you were talking to, Chad.
That's true. You have the market cornered, but for the rest of us mere mortals,
right?
None of us are ever always right. But yeah, you know, I mean, we thought, hey, maybe we'll sell 25 books here and do something fun. And it turned out we sold out all of Amazon stock. They had to order more. It's the second time they've had to reorder already. And so, and it shot, the book today is the number one baseball book on Amazon. So I'm just feeling extremely grateful today and appreciative of this wonderful community that we have here called Red Leg Nation. You want to talk about Reds baseball, though, current Reds baseball?
Sure. Let's talk about some baseball and the Reds and Reds baseball.
Are you sure? Because I don't know if you noticed, but the Reds got swept in the season opening series.
Yeah, but then they swept the Cubs in the next season.
See, when you put it like that, and there's no other way that I would expect you to put it, you know, when you put it that way, it doesn't seem quite so bad.
Yeah.
But, of course, they got swept in a three-game series and swept the Cubs in a brief, rain-shortened one-game series. But, hey, it's a sweep. We'll take it.
A sweep is a sweep, and it always feels good to sweep the Cubs. Yeah, no, the baseball season is long, and you know, how many seasons have we seen where the Reds get out of the gate hot and then they end up not being very good? And it's just, you can't tell anything from the first couple of weeks of the baseball season. It's always kind of weird. The weather is always kind of crappy somewhere. Like right now they're playing in, I believe it's negative 40 in Pittsburgh right now.
Approximately, yeah.
Snow on the ground.
And that's sort of the point that I wanted to make, which is that they went 0-3 in that first series, and you would have thought the sky was falling. And certainly 0-3 is not good. I'm not going to try to sugarcoat it and try to convince you of that. but it's 0-3 against the Nationals, who are a really good team. And, you know, if you look at it, if you actually dig down into each game, a lot of positives in each game. I just could not get worked up over the Reds going 0-3. I didn't like it. I'd much rather be 3-0 after that first game, but being 1-3 after four, you know, you're right. It's a long season.
Yeah, it's. Yeah, I mean, if they win, like they're with Pittsburgh now. This is a 4-game series, right?
4-game series through the weekend.
So, I mean, what if they win 3 out of 4 in this series? Then they're 4-5.
Yeah, but Reds Twitter is schizophrenic. They'll be excited then, and then the next time they lose 2 in a row, we'll be all down again.
Yeah, it's not football, kids. It's baseball. It's a long season.
Exactly, and I want to sort of give a demonstration of what we mean when we say it's a long season in a moment. But to me, even though they lost those first 3 games and went 1-3 in the first 4, man, so many things to be excited about for me, and it all comes back to the starting pitching. And you know, in 3 of the first 4 games, got what they call quality starts, whether you believe in that as a metric or not, but quality starts. And even some Luis Castillo who should be the best of this bunch, did not have a quality start, had some command issues, but even his, there was lots of positives I thought that come out of it. Are you with me? You think the starting pitching is far and away the most exciting thing that we've seen this year?
Completely. And like, when was the last time we got a week into the season and we're like, hey, this starting pitching's looking pretty good? It's been a while. And you were right with Castillo. You know, he had some location issues that really the problem was that they resulted in a couple of balls being hit further than you would like to see the opponents hit the ball. But he still had like, what, a 6-1 strikeout to walk ratio or something like that.
He struck out 6. And 4 of them came on just absolutely filthy changeups.
Yeah.
Stuff to me, it looked just as good as it did last season. He just couldn't locate that fastball.
And then, boy, Tyler Molly's start. We really should spend some time on Tyler Molly.
Why? Did he do well?
He pitched 6 innings against the Cubs, and they only got 1 hit.
The Chicago Cubs?
The Chicago Cubs. He struck out 5 of the first 6 Cubs, if I'm remembering correctly.
The 2-time division champion and won a World Series 2 years ago? Chicago Cubs?
Those Cubs. And they didn't have like their B-team lineup on the field either.
Yeah, it was the good one. Tyler Molly. You know, I'm going to say it again. You'll hear me say it 1,000 times. I tweet it all the time. That guy just gets batters out. That's all he's ever done.
Yeah.
So exciting.
Yeah. I think there were a few people. This is a perfect demonstration of things like vaguely panicking after his last spring training start. And it's just like, why? I don't.
If you're one of the people that panics over spring training start, oh my gosh, don't talk to me.
Right. Half the time, if a pitcher gets shelled in the spring training start, it's because they were told to just throw breaking balls for 3 innings. Like, you know. It's working on stuff. They're not actually trying to get batters out all the time so much as they're trying to, like, work on location with a particular pitch or whatever.
Well, Cody Reed is a good example who had some look good at times during the spring. And I do want to talk about, you saw Brandon Finnegan and Cody Reed throw some there this week. But there was one start where he really was just grooving it, except he gave up a couple long home runs and in bad spots or something, and so he ended up giving up 3 runs or something. And after the game, Brian Price and Cody Reed both were like, well, in those situations, to those hitters, I'm trying to work on be able to throw a breaking pitch as an out pitch or something. I can't remember exactly what was said, but I'm trying to work on this specific pitch to be an out pitch. And that was a spot where I could try to work on it and try to sneak it by the batter. And of course it didn't work, but he's working on things. That's not something he would necessarily have thrown if his number one goal was to get a hitter out. So that's why, come on, Tyler Molly was not great in his last spring training start, but throw it out the window. It means nothing because when the bell rang, when the regular season started, and he came out with the Reds, you know, 0-3, rookie pitcher on the mound, he looked like a 10-year veteran. I mean, he was painting the edges of the strike zone. He can throw his fastball, well, just about any of his pitches, but especially that fastball, anywhere he wants it, Gannon.
Yeah. Yeah, he was, I mean, that his control was just amazing watching that game. It definitely made you understand, you know, what he's done and how he's managed to have the results that he's had in the minor leagues. It was just so exciting just to watch it and think, wow, this guy plays for the Reds and we're going to get to watch him for a while.
Right. You know, let's go back to opening day, because we didn't want to talk about all the starters so far. Homer Bailey, 6 very, very strong innings, only gave up 1 run. That run was due, really not his fault. It was some shoddy defense. So really strong start on his first opening day start. Struggled a little bit in his second start against the Pirates. 4 2/3, 7 hits, 5 runs allowed. But we saw a lot in that first start to make us believe that Homer Bailey is healthy, number one. And number two, he can be the guy that you and I sort of expected him to be, which is a, you know, reasonable, maybe a number 4 star, number 3 maybe at his ceiling this year.
Yeah, he's just kind of like he's sort of transformed into gritty veteran at this point. But it's fun to watch because, you know, Homer's not guessing up there. Like, he knows what he's doing.
Yes.
And so whatever he's lost in terms of stuff is compensated for a fair extent by the fact that he knows exactly what he's trying to do and he does it.
On Sunday against the Nationals, the third game of the series, Sal Romano pitched, and man, just a brutal first inning. Only got up 2 runs, but 34 pitches, and it looked like, oh, here we go. But somehow he settled down through 6 innings, gave up 3 runs. But again, to me, it was a lot of the Romano we saw during the second half of last season, who really just he doesn't get ahead of himself, and he doesn't get rattled, and he just settled down and looked like a, you know, it's a, it was 3 runs and 6 innings pitched, which is, you know, it's a, not a great outing, but it's a quality start. And after that first inning, the fact that he was able to even get to 6 innings is fantastic.
Yeah, that was great. And it's, you know, there's, I think, kind of a long history of, I should actually look at this someday and see if it's the case, but like, there are certain starters that always have that kind of like, if you, you might get him in the first inning, but after that, it's, you're not getting to him. Who just kind of take a minute to settle down. And I think Romano has that reputation of being a guy who might take just a minute to get settled down once the game starts. And yeah, but I mean, he I agree, looked good, looked really shaky the first inning, and then totally fine for the rest of the game. And by fine, I mean looked like a good pitcher. And it's just, it's, you just can't say enough about it. I mean, this first, you know, Castillo basically gave up a couple of homers that resulted in an ugly line. But otherwise, you can't complain about any of the starting pitchers the first time through the rotation.
Yeah, the way I put it about Castillo is that he did nothing at all to cause anyone to lose faith in his bright future. Yeah. Because, I mean, we expect him to be the stud of this staff this year. And I saw nothing that makes me think that's not going to happen. And he's a guy that didn't back down. The 2 home runs he gave up, he came right back and just blew away the next hitter both times, striking him out. So someone asked a question on Twitter, and I'll go ahead and pose it to you, Jason, because it's an interesting question. Luis Castillo, Sal Romano, Tyler Mahle. Who's gonna be the best pitcher of that group? The question was asked, who's going to get the most wins of that group? I would say, who do you think is going to be the best pitcher this year of that group?
Like, are we this year?
This year, yes. Just this season.
One of them.
You're going to have to clarify.
Castillo, but I would not be surprised if it were Mahle.
Yeah, I mean, I think I say Castillo because I think he's probably got the most just sheer overpowering talent. But yeah. If you told me it was going to be Tyler Mahle, yeah, I'm not going to bet a dime against that happening. And the truth of the matter is, the more I watch Sal Romano, I still think he's probably like a number 3 starter, like a dependable guy. But, you know, he just keeps getting better. And I've got nothing, not one thing bad to say about Sal Romano. That guy's a big league pitcher, and he's never going back to the minor leagues. He's going to be in the big leagues for a long time if he stays healthy.
It certainly looks that way. And he's somebody who really seems to have just figured it out and come into his own and seems to be ready to go now, which, great. That's what the Reds need.
Absolutely. And here's why I'm so encouraged, even though they started 1-3. I sort of facetiously said it was the most encouraging 1-3 start in baseball history. But the reason why is, man, that pitching was such of a bugaboo last year. There's just the Achilles of this team. And you think back to 1 year ago. 1 year ago, Scott Feldman was your opening day starter. And here we are with, you know, at least 3 of the first 4 pitchers that started for the Reds with real upside. And, of course, the other one being Homer Bailey. But 3 of the 4 with just really bright futures if they can stay healthy. And it's just such a different – it's where I hoped we'd be last year with this rotation of the young pitchers. But it's just such a different dynamic. And that's why we sort of, you know, half kidding, I guess, I don't know, said the Reds are going to make the playoffs next year. But that's the primary reason, is that this group of starters is, it's just not even in the same galaxy as what we experienced last year.
Yes.
Exactly. Man, this would be so much easier if you just let me talk and you just agree.
Well, it's a strategy we can try maybe one day.
Yeah, not going to happen today probably. Now, everyone sort of got a little excited about 0-3 start, and I get it. It's not good. You know, I'm not telling you to be happy about it. I'm not happy about it. I wish the Reds had been started 3-0. But everyone wanted to jump on it as if it were an omen of, oh, here we go again. Same old Red Legs, another 90-loss season. And I know you didn't take it like that, did you?
No. And frankly, especially against the Nationals, who, let's be real, are going to win a lot of games.
Boy, they're good.
That is a ridiculously stacked team, and I would not be surprised to see them win more than 100 games.
And the three starters that started against the Reds in that series, come on. They all three finished in the top six of Cy Young voting last year. And, of course, we're talking about Max Scherzer, Steven Strasburg, and Gio Gonzalez finishing the top six National League Cy Young. So, come on. I mean, it's just not – okay, 0-3, we're not happy about it, but it's not that surprising.
They're good. They're a fantastic team, and those are some good pitchers. And yeah, it's just not anything to get worked up. And you know what? Here's the thing: is that at some point in the season, the Nationals are going to get swept by somebody.
Yeah,
and they might get swept by a terrible team. It happens. That's baseball. That's the way it goes. Like, it's just you can't tell how good a team is from one series. You need 162 games. Or at least 100 games before you really start to have a sense of who's good and who's not.
Oh, you're so right. You're so right, Jason. For the first time ever, you are so right. And a perfect example of that is I went back and looked at the three teams last year who won 100 or more games. Three teams won 100 or more. And that was the Cleveland Indians, the Houston Astros, last year's champions, and the Los Angeles Dodgers. And it just... I know it hurts because it's the first three games of the season and we're all anticipating that, but the Reds may be headed for bad times this year, but don't draw that conclusion. And here's why. The Cleveland Indians, they had 2 3-game losing streaks in just the first 2 weeks of the season. They had at least 1 3-game losing streak and 1 4-game losing streak in each month until September. 7 times last year, Cleveland lost at least 3 games in a row and yet still won 102 games. Now, they didn't lose the first 3 games of the season, but is there any difference in getting swept in April versus August? No. So, the Houston Astros, how about them? last year's world champions who won 101 games. How did they win 101 games when they had a 3-game losing streak in the first week of the season and had at least 1 losing streak of at least that many games in every single month of the year, including a 5-game losing streak in August and a 4-game losing streak in September? How do they still win 101 games, Jason?
It's almost as though baseball is sometimes unpredictable.
Yes. It's a long season. The Los Angeles Dodgers won 104 games. 3-game losing streaks in each of the first 3 months of the season. In August, they lost 5 in a row. In one stretch of September, they lost 4 in a row. In another stretch of September, they lost 11 in a row. And they won 104 games last year. So basically, I'm telling you that the Reds are going to win 100 games this year.
That's what you're telling me. That's what I hear.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, no, everybody just kind of needs to calm down. It's 3 games. 3 games doesn't mean anything.
Yeah, I mean, every team, that's what I'm saying. The very best teams in the league did it last year multiple times. And
yeah.
And to me, there's just a little difference between losing the first 3 and losing 3 in, you know, mid-July or something. So, I'm sick of the losing, Jason, but I'm still telling you this team is going to the playoffs.
I'm right there with you, Chad. I'm on the train.
On the train. I can't believe it. Well, the train's not going so well as we're recording this. The Reds are in the process of losing their 4th, so maybe I'm wrong. Maybe they're not going to make the playoffs.
No, they are. They totally are. Though, while let's take a second and talk about the current Reds game, because I would like to get on a soapbox right now.
Ooh, get on your soapbox, Jace.
The soapbox is this: Amir Garrett is not a relief pitcher.
Yeah, what's going on with that?
I do not know. I mean, it seems to me that he basically pitched his way onto the team in a relief role. And I get the thing with, like, Cody Reed and Brandon Finnegan and stuff is just, like, they know it's just going to be for a start or two, and they don't want to mess with Garrett. But if at some point a starting pitcher shows that he, like, you know, if it's one of the young guys and he needs to go back down, or if it's an injury type thing, because you know they're not getting through the season with five or six starting pitchers. If there's any significant absence, Amir Garrett needs to be the person who fills that hole. And I will accept no argument to the contrary.
I really don't understand, and I often don't understand what the Reds are doing. But, you know, when it happened initially, the sort of company line was that, all right, here's what we're going to do. We're going to put Amir Garrett in the bullpen. We're going to have him make that first start that we'll need a fifth starter on. Unless Brandon Finnegan, he or Brandon Finnegan are going to make it, basically. But we'll keep him in the bullpen until then because we want another lefty in the pen against the Nationals and the Cubs, two left-handed hitting lineups. And I thought, well, that's reasonable, you know, and then work him into being the fifth starter. And after that, maybe send him down, let him start in AAA if, you know, Finnegan grabs the spot or however they handle it. But, you know, I didn't hear what it was said on the pregame show the other day, but evidently Brian Price made some kind of a comment about Garrett doing well, transitioning to the bullpen. And I don't want to take it out of context, and I don't want to get upset about something I didn't actually hear. But, man, do not tell me they're taking Amir Garrett. I mean, he may just be a reliever long term. He may be. Why in the world right now would you make that decision?
And why, and here's what I don't understand, is why would you make that decision about Amir Garrett, but not about, say, like Cody Reed or Robert Stevenson? Because Amir Garrett is the one who has actually had, like, success at the major league level, and especially with all of the stuff, his injury and stuff. Like, I don't know why you don't give him another shot as a starting pitcher. I do not understand.
And again, I don't want to get ahead of myself, and I don't want to, you know, presume anything the Reds aren't actually doing. But I can't come up with any rational explanation for Garrett still pitching out of the bullpen.
Yeah.
I mean, you know.
Well, you know, as you and I have talked sort of in the off season and toward the beginning of the season, one of the things we've often said is that one of the comforting things about what the Reds seem to be doing is that you might not agree with what they're doing 100%, but you understand why they are doing what they're doing.
Yes.
And I don't understand this.
The only way I can rationalize it is if Brian Price, who's managing for his job, if he, and so he's more inclined to look for short-term benefit over long-term gain for the organization. I can see how he'd rather have Amir Garrett in the bullpen rather than starting in AAA. I mean, I want him starting in the majors, but yeah. But I mean, I can see how Brian Price would want that. I can't see how Dick Williams and the Reds organization think this is a – well, I say – let me just turn that back just a little bit, circle back around. Maybe they have a plan of putting him back into the rotation soon. Maybe yes. That's still the plan. Maybe they're just going to keep him here for another series or so in the bullpen until we can get Hernandez back or
maybe they're trying to limit innings or, you know,
cause right.
there are explanations, but we haven't been offered any of them yet. And so right now I'm just kind of confused.
Well, I want them to tell us because all we've heard is this sort of vague thing that Brian Price said supposedly in a pregame show that he's transitioned to the bullpen. You know, come out and tell us exactly what's going on because I'm having a really hard time deciphering it. And if he doesn't get any starts, if he's just in the bullpen, he'll be a good reliever, but I will be unhappy.
Yes.
I mean, they've got Kevin Quackenbush in the bullpen. Why do they need Amir Garrett?
Real? Why do you need anyone else when you have Kevin Quackenbush?
Why is it so much fun to say Kevin Quackenbush?
It's almost as fun as it was to say the name of a pitcher the Reds had last year.
Ooh. Are you talking about Tim Adelman?
I'm not, no.
Scott Feldman?
No.
Perhaps Luis Alberto Bonilla.
That's the one.
that never fails to be amusing.
And I consider it my personal mission to give you an opportunity to say that name every time I'm on the pod.
Believe me, I'll take the bait every single time. Yeah, Kevin Quackenbush. You know, I went down to the ball yard on Saturday, second game of the National Series, where it was just a ridiculous, ridiculous loss. And Quackenbush came in and just vomited all over the mound, basically. Just awful. Just terrible. And boy, there's a really big drunk guy sitting up behind me that really doesn't like Kevin Quackenbush, but he was having a good time yelling at him. And by that time, the crowd had thinned out, and I'm sure Quackenbush could hear every word. It was a little uncomfortable, actually. It's one thing if you're yelling at a guy, but it's another if he can actually hear you.
Yes.
But he said some impolite things about Kevin Quackenbush. And I'll say this about Quackenbush, he was trying. It's not like he was, trying to suck.
Yeah, I think something that every fan needs to make sure they remember is that every major league player is trying all the time. Like, this is especially true of guys who are really trying to get themselves established. Nobody is going out there being like, I don't really want to today. I'm just going to not try that hard.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Why are you mad at the guy?
Taken away. Yeah, like.
I mean, if Dick Williams looked at me and put me in the pitch, I'm going to give up 10 runs. You can get mad at me if you want, but I'm trying the hardest I can. I don't want to give up 10 runs. Blame, who put me in or who signed me, Giovanni Gallardo. But poor old Quackenbush was taking it. The point you just made is one that I really took to heart back when Corey Patterson was leading off every day for the Reds. And poor Corey Patterson took so much abuse. And he was awful. I mean, he was a terrible player, and then Dusty Baker had him leading off. And, I mean, he was bad. But you know what? That guy busted his tail every single day for the Cincinnati Reds. And I just got to feel sorry for the guy. I mean, he was awful. I didn't want him leading off for my team. But, man, I think I didn't deserve what was heaped upon him when he was doing nothing other than trying as hard as he could to be the best baseball player he could be. I wonder if he's available.
I'm sure he is.
We need a low on base percentage leadoff hitter. Oh, no, we have one of those.
Well, it has mostly been Winker so far.
Yeah, Winker's batting fifth tonight, though, or sixth. Batting sixth.
Yeah, sixth. That's kind of weird. I don't know if we're doing I don't know. I don't know what that's about. But.
Batting six, got double switched out of the game while Billy Hamilton is leading off. And 0 for 4, Billy Hamilton batting 0.63 on the season, a sterling 243 OPS thus far.
Though in fairness, a lot of Reds hitters do not have such sterling numbers right now, which has been the primary issue. And it's, Joey Votto, for instance, is not going to bat 167 this season.
He might.
No.
No?
No.
I don't know, Jason. I think he's getting old.
No.
Scooter's hitting 450.
Yeah. Yeah. Scooter and Tucker are the only people who have hit, anything at all this season so far. And that's not going to be the case the whole year. So,
it's not. Yeah. Suarez and Votto are going to hit. Winker's doing fine getting on base. He's going to hit. Scooter, I'm happy. I'm happy with what he's done at the plate. He's been really shaky defensively at second base, but if he keeps hitting, it's going to force the Reds' hand, and what's going to happen with, who knows, what's going to happen with Nick Senzel?
Yeah, I was at the Nick Senzel press conference yesterday. You posted that up on Red Leg Nation. And then we talked to the Bats manager, it's Pat Kelly, I think. I don't want to get
yes.
his name. Pat Kelly. I keep wanting to say Tom Kelly for some reason, but it's Pat Kelly.
Former Minnesota Twins manager Tom Kelly.
Yeah, that's totally what that is. I've got their names inverted in my head. He talked today, and I asked him about Senzel, and he said that excuse me, I asked him what he think needed to happen for the major leagues, and he said it's just reps at this point. He said take him around the league a couple of times, see teams adjust to him, see how he responds to it, and then he'll be ready to go. But he had, he had Senzel at Double A last year because Kelly was the Double A manager last year for the Reds in Pensacola. So he knows a lot of these guys pretty well, and he seemed, fairly confident that it was not going to be too long before Nick Senzel was ready.
And so the question is going to be, where is he going to play? You know, he's playing second base down there, although some, you know, he answers some of the questions that he has to be ready for any of the three infield positions, the non-Votto infield positions. You know, if Scooter keeps hitting, and if, you know, Jose Peraza is hitting 067 right now.
But here, let me ask a question. Okay. And this is, I'm going to go into the outfield a little bit for this, too. There's a certain group of Reds fans that seem to always favor sort of the players who will hit or whatever. So I want you to imagine the following scenario, okay? Your up-the-middle defense is Nick Senzel at shortstop, Scooter Gennett at second, and Scott Schebler in center field. Anybody really want to see that? Because I don't.
They'll hit.
They'll hit, and so will the other team.
The Reds pitchers won't want to see that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's because you can't put on paper defensively, you can't put it on paper as well as you can with the hitting stats. And also because it's really obvious when a guy is struggling at the plate, and it's not always obvious if they're brilliant in the field.
Right. Yeah.
But that's part of the game, too.
From what I've seen of Senzel, he is quite athletic and all of that stuff. But, you know, if he's at short, then I want somebody at second who can play second base. You know, I'd much rather Senzel Blandino than Senzel Gennett.
Yeah, I can see that.
It's nothing against Scooter. Like, we love Scooter here.
Sure.
But I think even Scooter would tell you that defense is not his strong suit.
No. No, but, I mean, you know, he's got a hit, and he hasn't slowed down this year. That's his calling card. If he doesn't hit, it's tough to play him. You're right. I mean, and that's why I really am sort of at a loss to predict what the Reds are going to do with Nick Senzel, because there's not really any great answer there right now. I mean, nothing's really clear there yet. Because of what you just said, you know, Senzel with, you know, no games at this point under his belt at shortstop, regular season games. You're going to put him at shortstop in the major leagues right now, or in, you know, a month after he's been playing second base and shortstop maybe in AAA? I don't know, but I do think that Peraza's got to hit. If Peraza doesn't hit soon, at least reasonably, I just think it's going to be too easy to slide Senzel in that spot, or even slide Suarez over and put Senzel back at third. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, if Peraza continues to not hit, then he's going to run out of rope before too long. You're right. It's just going to be interesting to see what the Reds do.
It really is, and you're right. I mean, they would have Tucker if the lineup we're thinking about would have Tucker and Billy Hamilton up the middle, but then a really weak middle infield.
Yeah,
and even if Senzel has a chance to develop into a really good shortstop, you're not going to expect that from day one. I mean, Barry Larkin was kind of a garbage shortstop his first year or two until he really learned the position. And he ended up being good.
He ended up being quite good, yeah. And so, I mean, you know, we'll see.
I think Barry Larkin made an all-star team one time. He was that good.
One time. I think there was some vote like a couple of years ago, and they put him in some club or something that means you're good.
It was the Freemasons.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Is he one of the Illuminati now?
He is. I'm pretty sure Barry Larkin is Illuminati. Illuminati confirmed. All right, whatever. I don't know. You know, I don't know what they're going to do. I think that it's going to, at some point in the next couple months, though, there's going to be a sort of an inflection point where the Reds have got to make a decision, and we're going to go one way or the other. And I just hope they make the right decision. And I wouldn't mind seeing Peraza. Hey, I wish he'd hit like crazy and make the decision really hard, because that's a good thing. Jason, can I talk to you about a piece, your column at Red Leg Nation this week? Do you mind?
You always can talk to me about things that I write.
Well, you wrote something at redlegnation.com, the home for obsessive fans of the Cincinnati Reds since 2005, and you wrote this column you call on the championship track. And you had a little Schoolhouse Rock title this week, Roster Construction Junction. What's your function, Jason?
Well, I was just, one, thank you for the title praise. I was very proud of it.
That's a good one.
we were both calling back to elementary school and really just beating the railroad metaphor to death.
So you did a poll, or you posted a poll on the Red Leg Nation Twitter account at Red Leg Nation, and it said, trying to ignore what just happened with the Nationals, please and thank you, how would you grade the Reds in terms of how they've constructed the roster? And what did you discover from the answers to that?
That most people think it's fine.
Yeah.
Yeah. The choices for anyone who might not have seen were great, good, fine, and blarg.
What was that last one again, Jason?
It was blarg.
Blarg. You mean like a website that like a weblog? Like Red Leg Nation is a blarg?
Blarg, like the sound that fans make when an opposing hitter hits a ball far, far, far. Yeah, and I wanted to do A, B, C, D, F, but Twitter only lets you have four options, so that's what I did. But generally, you know, the good and blarg options were more or less evenly split, and then a lot of people thought fine. There were like four people apparently who voted for great, and I assume that was by accident, frankly. But yeah, people seem basically fine with it. I think the complaints primarily, and these are my complaints, had to do with sort of those like little marginal decisions. Like, I don't understand, and I don't think anybody does, why Gosselin and Pennington are both on the Reds. The Amir Garrett, Cody Reed thing is a little bit confusing. The Gallardo signing is odd. Like, they're just some little odd things that probably don't really matter in the grand scheme of things, but they are nevertheless a little bit strange.
Yeah, I don't get Gallardo at all. Cliff Pennington, Phil Gosselin. I mean, I think that you, you called them, they had names like late 80s sitcom uncles. That's pretty good. But, you know, it looks to me like a guy like Phil Gosselin especially is a guy that's pretty easy to discard if and when Nick Senzel's ready, or if you need a roster spot, you know, I guess. He's probably not going to get claimed if you designate him for assignment. Brandon Dixon might get claimed if you designate him for assignment. He's probably got options,
is
though.
Well, I guess Senzel isn't on the 40-man yet, is he?
I don't think he has to be yet, no. So they'll have to make a room for him, so that'll be Gosselin.
That's the first time that's I've thought of that, and that might actually be a good reason.
Yeah, anticipating we need a roster spot here soon.
Right.
Gosselin can play a bunch of positions, you know, somewhat credibly. Also, where did Phil Gosselin go to college?
I don't know. Did he go to Virginia or Georgetown, Chad?
He went to Virginia.
Okay.
He was on the national championship team at Virginia, yeah. yeah, that's an odd one. Cliff Pennington, I knew from the moment he came to spring camp, that guy was going to be on the opening day roster just because he's a shortstop.
Yeah. Yeah, here's your backup shortstop.
Yeah. I guess you could sort of understand that. Whether you agree with it or not, you can sort of understand that. I wanted Brandon Dixon to make the final roster. I thought he's got a little pop in his bat, can play a few positions. Again, somewhat credibly. I would have liked him over Phil Gosselin.
Yeah,
pretty easy.
I think Brandon Dixon is a pretty excellent sort of 24th, 25th man on a roster where he's not ever probably – I mean, you know, players can always change and grow and stuff. You never know. But probably he's never going to be the kind of quality player that you want in a starter. But he is power off the bench. He can sub in easily enough in a lot of positions when somebody needs a day off. You know, so he's got that sort of versatility aspect to him that makes him a good option for that kind of thing. But yeah, I don't know. I was surprised that they didn't give him that spot. But
he seems to me like he could have a Chris Heisey career with a little bit more, you know, flexibility in where you play him, but sort of that type of career, just a longtime bench guy, but could stick around for a while if he gets a chance and performs.
Yeah, and it's easy to imagine him having sort of that one season where he kind of catches lightning in a bottle and like Heisey did, you know, that kind of thing. And yeah, he seems like a perfectly fine player, and I think he's probably a major league bench player at his peak.
Do we know why the Reds spent $750,000? I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you there, Jason.
I was going to say there are a whole lot worse jobs than major league bench players.
Yeah, really. Give me that job.
Yeah.
Do we know why the Reds gave a major league contract and $750,000 to Yovani Gallardo? I mean, can you wrap your brain around that one at all?
The only thing I can think is this, which is that it's the bullpen version of what they were doing with Bronson last year, where he's somebody they can have in the bullpen, and if one of the young starters, as will probably happen a few times this year, just completely blows up, and they need somebody that they can just throw out there and be like, you're pitching till your arm falls off, then he's the guy. Like the old school emergency starter, like long relief, like swingman role. That's the only who, and he was always the worst pitcher in the bullpen, because if he'd been good, he'd either be starting or he'd be, you know, relieving in a more critical role. So that's the only thing that makes sense to me with him. It doesn't mean that's the right answer, but that's what I can think of.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's a reasonable way to look at it. But on the other hand, Gallardo's been one of the worst pitchers in the majors the last couple of years. I mean, this guy's done as an effective major league pitcher, in my opinion. He's trying hard, but
I would not have given him any money to play baseball. But yeah,
I mean, I can, you know, there are guys in the organization. Maybe there's not anybody that they think is ready for that. But I'd have brought back a Dick McGuire or something like that and given him $750,000 to do that.
Yeah, I don't know. I agree completely that it's a weird move, and we'll just have to see how he gets used throughout the year. I don't know. It's odd.
Last thing to talk about is this whole, we've touched on it with Amir Garrett, but Cody Reed, Brandon Finnegan look like they have the inside track somehow over Amir Garrett for that fifth starter spot. And it looks like it's going to be Finnegan now. You watched Finnegan pitch yesterday,
yeah,
right?
Well, and you know, I think Finnegan has had that spot, and it was just a matter of him getting ready. But, yeah, yesterday there was a simulated game here in Louisville, and I went and watched. And Finnegan pitched and Reed pitched. They were the two starters, respectively. And, you know, there was no scoreboard or anything running, so it was hard to keep perfect track of things. There was me and there was one other guy up there, and we were kind of trying to figure out how many pitches each guy had thrown. And best we could tell, Cody Reed threw 91 pitches in 4 2/3 innings. And Finnegan, the Reds were tracking his line, so I got his official line. He threw 86 pitches, struck out 9 in 5 2/3 innings. And, you know, my impression was that they both had kind of their moments. I personally, though Cody Reed later disagreed with me on this, thought that Reed was a little bit wild in the first maybe inning and a bit, and then calmed down pretty good. And Finnegan had one inning where he kind of seemed to, like a lot of pitchers do, where he seemed to kind of lose it a little bit, but then got it back. But they both looked, you know, Finnegan, I think, especially looked pretty good yesterday. And then, you know, I am sort of lucky enough to get access, and I got to talk to them. And Finnegan said what he was told was that if he did well yesterday, then he would start on Monday. But it turns out, actually, that the Reds made an announcement today, or at least Trent Rosecrans had a quote from Brian Price saying that Reed was going to start on Monday, and Finnegan would be starting for the bats in AAA on Monday, and then presumably Finnegan would be the fifth starter the next time that turn comes up.
I guess the hopeful part of all this is that Finnegan's healthy. And when we first started hearing about the forearm issues, I thought, oh my gosh, what's happening here? But he seems healthy.
Yeah, I saw no evidence that he wasn't. You know, from the quotes that I saw, they want to make sure that he gets
sort of stretched out. And
they want to make sure that the process between starts goes normally once before they officially slate him to start in Cincinnati.
Yeah. And again, baffled by why Amir Garrett's not getting that start. I'm just baffled. It doesn't make any sense to me. But what do I know, Jason?
Always things that we don't know, and I just hope that there actually are things that we don't know and not just, you know.
Yeah, I hope it's not what it looks like, I guess is what I'm saying. And very well, I'm perfectly willing to believe that it may not be what it looks like, but I really hope it's not what it looks like.
Yes.
Yeah, go ahead.
I was agreeing with you. I was making agreeing noises.
Oh, okay. Well, I will always allow you to repeat anytime you want to agree with me. We're through 1 week of the season, Jason. Has anything happened that would cause you to believe that your preseason prediction was faulty?
No.
No. Not even close, right?
Yeah, frankly, I'm encouraged because the starting pitching has been so good. I'm not remotely worried about the hitting. The team will hit what basically how it hit last year, I think. And yeah, and the starting pitching looks good, like legitimately good. And so as long if the starting pitching is good, then this team is 10 wins better automatically.
Yeah, and that's a big deal. Once you start doing that, like we said last year, you start getting in that territory, a couple breaks here and there, and all of a sudden we got a World Series parade in downtown Cincinnati.
Oh, Chad. Now who's the optimistic one? I had to talk you back into optimistic territory a few weeks ago, but now you're...
I know.
Series celebration.
That's what someone said to me on Twitter, actually. We need to go back and listen to that one because I was down there for a minute. But there's just too much to be optimistic about with all these young pitchers. It's terribly exciting. You know, we talked about Castillo, Romano, and Tyler Mahle. But then flip it around, and we're talking about Amir Garrett, Cody Reed, and Brandon Finnegan as well, all of whom are credible options for a start and all young. I mean, Garrett's the oldest one of the group. So... just there's not a I love Bronson Arroyo, but there's not an Arroyo in there. Late career Arroyo, I mean. And there's not a Scott Feldman, and there's not a Tim Adelman, and there's not an Asher Wojciechowski, and there's not a who else? Who am I forgetting?
No, right now we've got Homer Bailey and what, like six or seven guys in their early to mid 20s who everyone firmly believes have the ability to be like good major league starting pitchers. And it's just a matter of who realizes their potential and who doesn't.
We need to get back Luis Alberto Bonilla.
Ha, 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 ha.
Maybe not. We don't have room for him now. We've got good pitchers.
No room for your buddy there.
Yeah, I wish though, man. I wish. All right. Anything else you want to talk about here, Jace?
I don't think so, Chad. I think we're in good shape for now.
All right. Well, this is, as always, been fun. We're going to cut it a little short here tonight. But it's been a lot of fun talking about the Reds team so far in 2018. And frankly, I think Jason and I are both really encouraged by what we've seen. Still think it's going to be a really fun season. You can follow us at Red Leg Nation on Twitter and at redlegnation.com. If you still go to websites, we're there every day talking about the Reds. Jason's at Jason Linden on Twitter. I am... at Dotson C. We're on iTunes, the podcast. Thank you for downloading us. We're on iTunes, Stitcher, everywhere you get your podcast. You'll find us. Go subscribe. Give us a shout out, a rating and a review. Really appreciate that and appreciate you all taking your time. And again, I can't express enough gratitude from what I've seen from Red Leg Nation over the last 14 years, really. But it's been insane. And this week's really caused me to remember exactly why I love you guys so much. Thank you for buying the book. Those of you, keep buying the book. Leave me some 5-star reviews if you like the book. Jason, great talking to you again, buddy.
Always a pleasure, Chad.
For Jason Linden, this is Chad Dotson saying so long, everyone.
Thanks for listening to Red Leg Nation Radio from RedLegNation.com. Subscribe to Red Leg Nation Radio on iTunes or through your favorite podcast app and join us for discussion of all things Reds at RedLegNation.com. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.